thank everyone for coming. And the Bali Musa say that when there's something pulling you outside the Beis Medrash and you dedicate your time to Torah, that makes a special impact on the soul. I'd like to discuss halacha and sports. I'm going to break it down into two basic categories, but we'll also add many other dimensions. First, doing sports. And that would be less of a challenge than watching sports. Watching sports already gets into different issues, maybe even doraisas in certain cases. I don't want to scare you, but I don't know how many of you like to watch sports. But
that's why we're here today.
But doing sports also has its issues. And let's begin with the Rambam Hilchas Talmud Torah. The Rambam dedicates the third chapter of Hilchas Talmud Torah to the concept of Keser Torah. And the Rambam says, Misha Nesol Libo L'Kayim Mitzvah Zukara Oy. The whole seven chapters of Talmud Torah, the Rambam really condenses into one sentence. And the Rambam says that he whose heart prompts him, he has a genuine desire to fulfill this mitzvah, karoy, the way it should be done, al yasiach daito l'dvar machir. He should not digress, he should not confuse himself by going off the path. He should be single-mindedly dedicated to the study of Torah. And the Rambam goes on to say that he shouldn't waste a single night of his life with Sicha B'Teilim and Dvarim B'Teilim. He should dedicate himself to the study of Torah. And it's sort of like building up. You know, you got to build up to Keser Torah. Now, some interpret the Rambam as referring to any moment of time that's free from your basic needs, your biological needs. So therefore some say that v'nishmartem odes nafshos seichem, if you need exercise to build up your body, that doesn't come under this issue about lo yasiach daito l'dvar macherim. The Rambam means by dvar macherim sicha b'teila, things that are not necessary, they're a total waste of time, but something which is genuinely necessary. Now, if someone would argue that he can create an exercise program without having to do sports, he goes to the gym or he goes for a walk, he does his aerobics, and that's fine, and he gets the okay from his trainer or his physician, then I don't know if he has to do sports. But it becomes even more complicated. Because even if one were to argue that he does sports for the sake of exercise, to keep his body healthy, and a healthy mind is always occupied by a healthy body, but nevertheless, sports become very competitive. And they go a little bit beyond, and I'm understating it, the definition, the realm of building up one's body. And although the Torah says that v'nishmarta miyodas nafshal seichem, a person should do exercise, what we call chilutz atzomos, you know, to keep his body healthy, but sometimes people play sports, and if it gets too out of hand, if it's too competitive, then either of them, I'm afraid it's a violation of nishmarta me'odas nafshal seichem. And I'll just tell you one story. We used to go for the summers up to Boston to hear of Salvechik Shiur, and to spend some downtime, we used to go to the local playground, you know, that had a basketball court. We'd throw around the basketball. And one of the guys who came to hear the Rav Shiurim had learned in a different yeshiva, a very, very powerful yeshiva. It wasn't this one, so don't get nervous. And amongst the guys on the team, there was one particular fellow who was the outstanding student. He was literally the most brilliant student in the shiur. We had about 40 guys who came up that summer to Boston. He was clearly number one. Not myself. It's not like I'm talking about myself in third person. But let me put it to you this way. As competitive as he was in shiur, he was even more competitive on the basketball court. You did not want to go up against him for a rebound. And this fellow from a different yeshiva went up. He made the sorry mistake of going up against Rabbi so and so for a rebound. And it was not a pretty scene. It was not v'nishmartem modus nafshas seichem. On the contrary, we had to pick up the pieces, and the shame went out in the whole yeshiva belt about the YU guys. You know that they're very aggressive basketball players. You know. And I'm just understanding. And the truth is, I once had a similar experience myself when I made a mistake. We were playing especially on Hey ER, as they call it here. We used to divide up the yeshiva for certain games. You know, we took the fellas out, and I went up for a rebound against one of the Rebbeim, and I still could regret it to this day because I still feel it on my body. So I said, like, I started yelling at this guy. I said, "Listen, Rebbe, we're just playing a game of me," you know. But he took it extremely seriously. Once you put the man on the court, you've got to get the rebound, no matter what. It's Yehoreg Bal Yava, but for me it was Yehoreg. For him it was Yava. And like I say, I'm still shaking from it today. So that's why I say that when people justify playing sports because they need it for their body, for their healthy body, you've got to be careful, because sometimes it boomerangs. And as we say in Yiddish, punkfaker, it's the exact opposite. It's not healthy for the body at all. Now, this became a very big issue, and I get all serious now. This is not a joke when we talk about skiing. Now, I don't know if Hever here goes skiing, and I'm not here to brainwash you, just to convince you that what you're doing is wrong. But skiing is very dangerous, and especially if you're not a pro skier. So you have to be a chote niskar to be a good skier. You know, you violated. But what can I tell you? I was Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva, and I lost the Talmud. My mom lost the Talmud to skiing. It's very hard for me to even talk about it, because I remember him very well, very fond. This is not a story that I'm just drumming up for the Shia. This is a true story. And when we first heard the news, they thought maybe they could save his life, but to no avail. So skiing is something very dangerous. Now, I mentioned before the concept of aggressive sports, and that's one of the things that I wanted to call your attention to. Because aggressive sports could be dangerous. And this touches on a very, very fundamental question in halacha. What constitutes danger? We talk about sakon. What is danger?
You were talking before about how terrible sports can be. I see you're going with this kind of like.
I'm not sure where I'm going yet, but I'm just following the Maramic.
I was wondering, maybe it's also an aspect of like the profile.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. If it's via haftalerech kamocha, if you do it in a sensitive way, that's why I say if you get out on the court and you've sensed, you know, you want to be part of a team effort and you want everyone to get a chance, you know, you can do great mitzvahs out there. But your attitude has to be that one. It's not the competitive attitude that no matter what, I got to win. I got to score the most points. You know, there are all sorts of children's books that we read to our kids. And some of them really address this very issue, and they try to show you what it means to play sports in a way that you care for the next one. You know, you want to make sure that that one kid who can't hit the ball, you know, he's going to get the home. You know what I'm talking about. You read all the stories, and I don't know if you're old enough to read them to your kids yet, but what is sakon? I want to share with you a gewaltige chiddush. It's the Meshech Chochma, the Rameir Simcha Mitvinsk. It's a gewaltige chiddush, and I share it with you not only because we're discussing the issue of putting yourself into danger in certain cases of sports, but also because in and of itself, it's mind-boggling, his chiddush. You know that a woman is exempt from the mitzvah of Piri of a river. The Gemara derives that in Kiddushin from especially Alfus of a Kivshuha, Darko Shal Ish Lichmosh, Ein Darko Shal Ish Al Lichmosh. Rabbi Simcha goes out on a limb And he speculates as to why the Torah exempted a woman from period of rivah. And he says the following. That basically, the Torah does not obligate us to put our lives into danger for the sake of a mitzvah. There's one exception to the rule. What mitzvah are we all here obligated in if time comes? And yet it involves putting ourselves into danger. Milchama, the mitzvah milchama. You know, well, a person will say, I'm not going to go out to war. Why? Because for chaybem, I might get killed. No. So if everybody says, this is the mitchastina chayis, if everybody says, I'm not going to go out to war because for chaybem, so you've undermined the whole mitzvah of milchama. It's one of the tariq mitzvahs. It's more than one mitzvah. There are many mitzvahs in milchama, but primary. Says Rav Meir Simcha, v'kivshuha means go out to battle. But the Torah deliberately connects v'kivshuha to pru revu. Ayomer Hashem on the pru revu v'losot v'kivshuha. What was the Torah trying to convey? Says Rav Meir Simcha, that a man has to put his life into danger. In what case? Which mitzvah? Milchama, the mitzvah of kibush. But a woman is not obligated to keep. And a woman goes back to the original principle that v'chaybahem, you do not expose yourself to a life-threatening situation, even for the sake of a mitzvah. Says Rav Meir Simcha. Therefore, the Torah did not obligate a woman to become pregnant and to give birth to a child. Why? Because childbirth entails a life-threatening situation. And I believe that if you accept Rav Meir Simcha, that principle and that definition of life-threatening situation has to be true l'dore doros, for all generations. You know, lest someone raise his hand and say, well, in the olden times, what were the percentage of women who never died at childbirth? Today, how many women die at childbirth? One out of three went at one point in the day. Back in the day. Right? Today, what is it? 1 in 1,000? I don't know what the numbers are. But if the Chiddush of the Meshech Chachma is defining a mitzvah, it's eternal, it's part of Torah, I wouldn't say that it should depend on one particular period of time. You know, to say that a woman was exempt from this mitzvah because at that moment in time it was life-threatening. But rather, what Rav Meir Simcha is telling us, that even if 1 in 1,000 will die, that means exposing yourself to danger. That's my own chiddush. He doesn't say that piece. But I'm suggesting that when you talk about playing sports, you know, you have to honest to goodness do the research and figure out, are you playing what they call extreme sports, which might put yourself, expose yourself to danger. But now I want to raise a different dimension of sports. How many sports do you and I know of that we play here in the United States of America in which we hit somebody? Forget about boxing, wrestling, even less aggressive sports. You play tackle football. So I don't know, baseball, I'm not sure. Maybe you slide into home plate. I don't know, there might be the rabosai. We all know that to hit someone is a violation of a lav d'oraisa, namely Ben Yosef. Right in the parsha of Shluchei Bezdin that mete out punishment for the violation of a lav in the Torah, that's 39 Malkus, and the Torah says, Arboim Yakenu Velo Yosef, don't add another one. And Chazal say, that's not a lav that's limited to a Shliach Bezdin who's meeting out punishment of lashes. It applies to every human being. If he raises his hand to strike another human being, he violates this law. So the question I want to ask you today is, when we go out and play sports, knowing full well that we're going to bang into someone, and that's part of the game, certainly in tackle football would be your paradigm example of that, what's the heter for violating a lav d'oraisa of Ben Yosef?
Isn't he being mindful?
So the question is, Machir, if you've seen the Mara Makomos, you'll notice that this issue, whether or not there's Mechila on Pen Yosef, can I say to you, I'm being mochel you if you hit me, is a basic issue in Rav Moshe Feinstein's Tshuvas in the Igros Moshe. Let's understand that mechila, in the case of somebody hitting you, has two dimensions to it. Number one, you don't have to pay me damages as Adam Uliolam under the din of Adam Amasik. And number two, it might possibly alleviate you of the violation of Pen Yosef. Do I have mechila rights not only on the dini mamonis, the rights to be tobey, to pay me damages, but even on the iser, the avera of Pen Yosef, of Hakos Chavir? So let me call your attention to the Rambam, which is number 5 on your list. And the Rambam in Perek Hei Mihilchos Chovel Mazik Aloch Aleph Osur Liodom Lachbo. Now, what does Chavola mean? To wound someone. It means he draw blood. So that's not relevant to us now unless we're going to boxing, which I hope no one here has a Havmina to do that. That's certainly not a Jewish sport.
Is bruising included?
Bruising. Excellent. Better than drawing blood. Bruising, for example, if you bruise your father or your mother, you get chenek for that. I mean, that's a capital crime. But I'm not saying you're going out to play tackle with your father. That I would never even dream of such a thing. But what about being chovil b'chaveiro? Says the Rambam, v'lo chovil b'lvad. Elakol amake odom kosher miYisrael. So again, I don't know who's on the other team, but kol amake odom kosher miYisrael. You know, if it's the intramurals in yeshiva, you got a problem here. Not only that, bein katan bein gadol, bein ish bein isha. Derech nitzayon. We'll come back to that phrase in just a minute. Hareza over belosase. He violates a law of the Torah. And the Rambam quotes the pasuk lo Yosef lahakosa. The Magid Mishnah says on the Rambam osur lachbo bein biatzmo bein bechavero. Well, Rabosai, is there some logic to be derived here from the fact that the Rambam says bein biatzmo? Nachum, you mentioned the law of mechila. Well, if a man is chovel in himself,
you can't give
a don't know. I don't know. I'm saying, you know, if you talk about a ma'isa mechila, I'm not yet ready for whether the mechila is valid or chalos mechila. But in terms of the mechila itself as a mitzias, if I'm chovel biatzmi, obviously, what's the given? That I was mocha myself, and yet I violate the law. So good, I don't have to pay myself for the chavola. That's great. But says the Magid Mishnah, let's just finish up the Magid Mishnah. Ein adam ashoy lachbo biatzmo. So it doesn't matter whether he's hitting someone else, an adam kosher, or even if he's hitting himself. You know, people are masochists, you know, sadists, and they do all sorts of and they inflict injuries upon themselves. Basically, there's a philosophical concept here that underlies this halacha. You remember the famous philosophical question, do I own my own body? And what's the answer, Al Pi Halacha? I don't own my own body. HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns my body. Aneshama Lach, Vaguf Shalach. I can't even inflict injury in my own body. Says the Rav Moshe Feinstein, and this you'll see in Shut Igros Moshe, number Zion on your page, and he's addressing the question of Chovel B'Chaveru B'Nesinas Rishus. Right, we reciprocally are giving rishus one to the other because we're playing in this game knowing full well you'll tackle me and I'll tackle you. He says, "Benosan rishus lechaver lakoso sheshol kvod toroso harav so and so im over alav v'chayv malchus hine mikevon sha'osur liodom lachbol biatzmo." And he quotes the Gemara above the Kama and the Rambam that we saw in Perek Hey Milchus Chovel Amazik. Vaday ein rishus o klu. The fact that he gives you rishus is not valid at all. L'salek iser bal Yosef me'ola. And therefore, Abosai, I submit to you, and I didn't see this anywhere in the Sfarim, that these kinds of aggressive sports have to be taken under the issue of makeh v'chavero, even if there's nesinus rishus. He says, v'af b'ofen shi'i apotel l'sham. He says, though, you're not chayev malchus in this case. Okay, fine. This is very important for those who are interested in whether you're chayev malchus for playing these aggressive sports. He says he would say that you're not chayev malchus. Even if, let's say, you're potter milshalim, right? Because if I say to you, I give you rishus to be chovil me. It could very well be possible that included in that nesinus rishus is a mechila on tashlumin. So normally we have a principle. If you learned the Gemara Ksubis, you remember ein adam loke umeshalim. You can't get a double punishment, right? So for example, if I have to pay you damages because I was mazik you, that would alleviate me from malchus, because you can't give him a double punishment. But what happens in a case where he was mochel me on the dini bamin, so therefore he forfeits, he waives his rights to claim and sue me in a court of law to pay him damages. Now I don't have to pay him, so you should give me what? Malchus for violating the law. Says Rav Moshe, he says, even so, Mikolokom ye potter mi malchus. Why? And here Rav Moshe comes up with the whole lumdus. What is Mechila? When he says, I don't claim any damages, any payments from you, compensation for damaging me, that itself is as if you paid me. That's what he says. Ye potter mi malchus. He still comes under the halacha of a lava nitag l'tashlumin. Why? Because nechshav kishilem lo mitzad hamachil. Okay, I don't want to get too much into that. Let's just finish the tshuva for Moshe, then Nochum, you're up. Not. Well, okay, baseball's a little bit. V'nasan lo rishus lachbol bo v'chavol bo chavola shepchusu misho pruto mistabish al chavola ketana kazu. He says, what happens if the chavola is very light? It's a lightweight chavola. It's less than a shava pruta. If you would have to pay damages, it would amount to something less than a pruta. So Rav Moshe comes up with a chiddush here, and he says that such a chavola, pchusa, which does not incur a chiyuv of a pruta, of a tashlume pruta, he says, is below tsar, below boshes, and he wants to be daik from the Rambam, that in such a case you would not violate the law of Ben Yosef. So here we have room to expand our involvement in playing sports. What's where Moshe's diuk in the Rambam? So you remember I pointed out to you when we read the Rambam in Hay that the Rambam adds two words. I wanted to call your attention to those two words. Derech Nitzoyon. If anyone has a pen, they should certainly underline those two words, Derech Nitzoyon, if they want to borrow mine. Because what the Rambam means is that this infliction, when I hit you, is going to cause you pain. It's going to cause you embarrassment. There's something aggressive and something very negative about it. Derech Nitzoyon. Nitzoyon means like a, you know, you lift your arm, you lift a fist against someone. Says Rav Moshe that if you want to argue, let's give him malchus in a case where he doesn't pay damages for the chavol, because it's a chavol pchusa mishava pruta. So Moshe claims, it's a big chiddush, that if it's such a chavol pchusa that it doesn't engender a chiyuv compensation of a pruta, then it's logical to assume that such a chavol ktana, such a chavol pchusa, doesn't even constitute a violation of derech nitzoyon, and therefore there's no malchus because there's no lav for Bat Pen Yosef. And here's the punchline of this whole long tshuva of Moshe. He has a beautiful proof from a Gemara in Sanhedrin that even when someone gives you rishus to hit him, nevertheless, there's a violation of the law. And this is from a sugya in Sanhedrin regarding a case that happened in Tanakh in the 20th chapter of Melachim Aleph. He says, "V'ish echad mibnei ha-neviim omar al re'ehu." One of the neviim said to his friend, "Bidvar Hashem," meaning he had a true prophecy, and he told his friend, "Hakeni na, please hit me." Now you may know that nevuah, the navi meets out an action that's symbolic of what's going to happen in the future, even clinches the nevuah. So in this case, there was a nevuah about Achav, that he would fall in the hands of Aram. He was a very bad man, Achav. And the navi, representing, so to speak, Achav, asked his friend to hit him, and that was the nevuah that he received. His friend, who was called Micho ben Yamaleh, he refused to hit the Navi. And the Gemara derives from this, Vayimayin ha'ish la'akoso, that he was over al divrei Navi. And the Chiddush is that he's over al divrei Navi, even though the Navi was asking him to violate the law of Ben Yosef. But a Navi is allowed, Rashoi Navi, a Navi could be Oker Dovrim in HaTorah, Mishum Horah Shah. Now, the Navi doesn't have the right to change the Torah, but he can alleviate a certain particular prohibition on a very temporary basis. And that's exactly what the Navi was doing. But one thing you see clearly, says Rav Moshe, that there wasn't going to be, had the person actually listened to the Navi, complied with the demand of the Navi, he would have violated the Isur of Ben Yosef by hitting the Navi. He would have been allowed to do so only because it's the Navi through Nevuah that has the ability to do so. Says Rav Moshe, if a person says you hit me, you still violate the law of Ben Yosef. Take a look at Rav Moshe Feinstein at the bottom of your page 1. He says, "Hu mishum de micha ya Navi hamuchsa." Muchsuk means we know from the past that he was a true prophet, not a false prophet. Shalavra alav horah shah. We have to listen to a Navi, even if it means violating a law of Bahoras Shah, that's only on a temporary basis. The Navi Amuksak Shiny Mizegufa Shayamakhuyev Lishmola Lakoso Afshu Lav Me Achar Dirishu Solomahani. He says, why does the Gemara have a valid proof that a person will be punished for not listening to the words of a Navi, even when the Navi tells him to violate a law? The answer is because the reshus that the Navi gave him is not meaningful to remove the law. What removes the law is the special power of the Navi. But in a regular situation of Ben Amal Chaver, if I give you permission to hit me, that does not alleviate you of the law. That's what Rav Moshe says, I bolded it, Dereshuso lo mahan. And this, I think, reflects what we saw in the Magid Mishnah, that Achovel v'atzmo is also in violation of the law. Again, Malchus is a different issue. And why? Because Nesines Reshus cannot alleviate a law d'oraisa. You do not own your own body, and certainly not your friend's body. The Torah wants the body to be protected. So if I submit to you in very aggressive sports, if all agree, you know, they all pe'echad agree that we can hit each other, it would not, again, it's as far as Dini Mominus is concerned, I have bailus, I could be mochel on the moment, I won't be able to sue you in a court of law for compensation for damages, but nevertheless, I still have the right to demand that you don't hit me, even if I give you a shush to hit me, because the Torah sees that, we'll call it a bein adam levakam. That belongs to the realm of bein adam levakam. It doesn't come under the rishus lo mahan. Those are the key words I want you to remember. Okay, no,
so somebody who hits himself, why is he not under the shmat?
If he hits himself,
yes,
he's over two lav.
He's over layers of an nishmatim.
Yes, both. Like, I mean, nishmatim over nishmashes is not really a lav. It's a bittul esek, I would say, or an iser esek.
It's only if it's life threatening.
Correct. That's why we need to add Pen Yosef, because that applies to any hakah. Again, Rav Moshe says it doesn't include a hakah that's less than a shava pruth. That's not derech nitzoyah.
But a temp, like a little temp or something, like the way.
Right, right. That would not be included.
If learning is out of Pen Yosef, then why we need this different issur of making scratches within oneself because of a malice? Right. So wouldn't it be redundant?
No, but that lav only applies if somebody died.
Right, but if we already know that
if you express
it,
your grief by ripping your skin.
According to the Rambam, you can't, that including Lo Yosef is hurting yourself. So why bother saying that? Because you, even if.
You mean why add another one?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know. I'm not ready to answer that question now. Maybe as this year goes on, we'll have an answer.
In Thinking Aloud by Rabbi Holzer, wrote the story for Rabbi Chaim, and Rabbi told him Rabbi Chaim used to wrestle with his students. How can we justify that with these sources?
So the only thing I could tell you, I mean, I didn't know that Rabbi Chaim was a wrestler. I mean, that's a chiddush to me. I never. What's it called? Thinking Aloud. Okay. I'm not familiar with the book. Is that the book with the yellow cover? Oh, I never cracked it open. Yeah. That's not for now, why I don't want to read that book, but but I would say the following, that maybe what Reb Chaim was doing was, he was assuming that wrestling with your students is not called Derech Nitzoyon. That's the only thing I can come up with. In other words, when you have a regular framework of Bein Odom LaChavero, of two people that are together in a jostling match, maybe that would be Derech Nitzoyon. Maybe if it's a Rebbe with a Talmud, it's not considered Derech Nitzoyon. That's the only conclusion I could offer you, the only suggestion. You also read Thinking Aloud?
No.
I didn't know it was so popular here.
Rebbe's allowed to hit his Talmud. So.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what... Is that what he meant? That he...
No, Rebbe Willing, you're around like a Shabbaton or something, and Rebbe Willing was playing basketball with his Talmidim, so he asked the Rav, is it okay for a Rebbe to play with his Talmidim basketball? So he said, yeah, it's mutter. Chaim even used to wrestle with them. Uh-huh. But apparently, like Rabbi Meisel didn't even deny this, that the story happened, because I've once brought it up to him.
Good, so I don't know whether it happened or didn't, but it, you know, basketball, as I say, basketball is on the border. I don't know... If you come down hard on someone, and it certainly, I would even suggest the following: the dunk, the tishkach. What I'm about to tell you is probably 100% wrong, but a foul, right? What you call a foul? Like, I think in basketball, if you foul five times, you're out. And if you, sometimes they can penalize you for a very aggressive foul. I don't know all the rules of basketball, but I would say a foul already is derech nitzoyon. Dok v'tishka, because yesh l'chal, you can make many distinctions, but if you get the concept, I think that we have to be careful when we're playing sports that we shouldn't overstep the bounds, and that's what I think you were saying before, that we have to take upon ourselves a Kabbalah that we're playing not for the sake of beating someone, literally beating someone, but for the sake of being part of a team effort. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, you'll see it, I mentioned it on the source, the second source on your page, has a shmooze about Bein Hazman. Are you familiar with that shmooze? And he basically says that the human being needs a little bit of a let. So for one person, a let up might be that he reads a book. Again, you have to be careful today what books you read. For another person, it might be maybe watching the Super Bowl game. I don't know. For another person, it might be playing sports. These are healthy breaks that a person, what we call a yerida l'tzarech aliyah. And almost every yeshiva that I know of has a Bein Hazman. It's usually between 2 weeks and a month. Here it's 3 months in the summer. I guess we lucked out because of the academic calendar. But whatever your Bein Hazman is, I don't think it has to be a full 3 months. It means that the body and the soul, the psyche of a man needs a... Does that mean I have to go out there and play aggressive sports? Basically, I'm not sure if you have to. So everyone should be very careful when playing sports that they don't overstep their bounds. All right, question. Yeah.
Does it make a difference that, I mean, even if it's not with other people, but someone's doing extreme sport, it's not like Vada, I'm going to get hurt if I do this sport. It could be, it happens, but it's not.
So that's why I quoted the Rameir Simcha Midvinsk, that pregnancy for a woman is already enough of a life-threatening situation that Torah alleviated her from the mitzvah of Puru Revu. That's a great mitzvah. But v'nishmarta mi'od is not, she's saying the extra word mi'od. So there's someone in Eretz Yisrael who wrote a 2-volume work on nishmarta mi'od is not, she'll say them. I think it's called Shmiras Haguf, if I'm not mistaken. So get a hold of that. I don't have it. I mean, I have it somewhere, but I don't know where it is. Like, I don't know where any of my sperm are. But you might find there a definition of what is considered exposing yourself to sakon. And then see how that would apply if you can get the statistical probabilities of injuries. In basketball, you should know, and tackle football for sure, the incidence of injuries are, and I can tell you because I was Rosh Yeshiva of an American yeshiva 18 years. You're talking about guys who get off the plane and the first thing you want to do is go out there and kill each other. I mean, in one sport or another, you know. Again, they don't call it that, but I call it that because I've seen some really bad injuries in my day, right there on the campus. For 10 years, I was Rosh Yeshiva of Shalavim. a Rosh Hashiva in Shalvin. And I want you to know, I saw injuries give feral. And I'm not saying that it applies to you guys. I'm not trying to make you feel uncomfortable. I just want you to make you feel terrible. But what I mean to say is that, you know, there are cases of very dangerous things. So you gotta be very careful. Let's go on to watching sports, because this seems to be at the face of it a real Iser D'oraisa. Okay, now we all can admit that we like to go to see a hockey game, a basketball game, you know, go down here in New York, we have Madison Square Garden, you know, we go to watch sports. People told me that to see today's game in New Orleans, you have to pay at least $1,000. I know someone who is calculating whether he could have his son's bar mitzvah down in New Orleans. And he calculated that to invite 100 people and pay for their hotel room for one night, their flights, their tickets to the game, and the Sa'uda would cost $1,800 per person. Now, if my math is correct, that's $1.8 million, is it not? 1,800 times 100? Somebody do the math for me? I'm going to talk to what's his name here from the math department. I am Dr. Snow. I'm going to complain to him. I think it's 1.8 million. All right, so he dropped the idea at the end. I guess he could only afford 1.5 million. No. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, once again, has a very important article which he published in a very fine journal. And it's called Amat Torah. He has many articles in Amat Torah. I don't know if they've ever been collected under one volume. This I don't know. But he talks about the Iser of Bechukoseyem Lo Teilechu, in which we're not allowed to imitate the Nimusim, the cultural activities of the Goyim. We can't visit their stadiums and their teatros, their theaters and their circuses and so forth and so on. And he addresses the issue of going to a stadium, to the issue of sitting in an office bareheaded, which a lot of people do because of their parnosa. We talk about Thanksgiving dinners and so forth and so on, which I have a lot of good stories about that, but not for now. In any event, Rashi says Lo Seichanim. Rashi adds another dimension to this whole issue about going to a stadium. I know when I was a kid, we used to collect baseball cards, right? I assume that still happens today. And what was the point of a baseball card? You know, I was always in this poll. I had one friend who knew every single percentage on the back of the baseball card. I don't know if they still have that. You know, he knew the batting averages of every player in the major leagues. I guess he was an elite. I would have said he could channel his great potential for other types of knowledge. But what happens is you begin to worship great athletes. And Rashi says, Lo sichanem, lo siten lem chen, which means that you put them up on a pedestal. Asur lo li adam lo mar kamen na goizeh. Now, does he mean na in the sense of physical beauty? Take a look at the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch when he brings down this halacha of lo sichanem. He writes, Asur l'saper b'shvachan. We're not allowed to speak the greatness of these people. Afilu lo mar kamen na ovid kochavim zebetu raso. Even if we're just describing his physical beauty, not to talk about his actions and how great, not to praise them. This all comes into the category of those averis which the Torah imposed to separate us from the nations, to be mavdil HaKadosh Baruch Hu from all the amim. And then he says, there is one heter. And I'm hoping that maybe we could figure out if worshipping athletes and talking about how great they are and their percentages and carrying around their pictures and cards could come under this heter. And I'm being facetious. Yeah. That's what he has in mind, right? How great is God who created... Well, I'd be dating myself if I mentioned Mickey Mantle, Sandy Koufax, and Bobby Hull, who in my day scored 50 goals in a year. Roger Maris, 61 home runs. By now they've passed that three times over. But keep in mind, he defeated Babe Ruth's record. And that was during my time. And then there was a guy named Willie Mays. You guys haven't even heard of him. We used to wait online for days to see if we can get a glimpse of the man. And then I lived in a neighborhood, in, I don't know if you know, Flatbush, where supposedly on Bedford Avenue, there was a baseball player that supposedly had a second home over there. His name was Gil Hodges. You heard of him? And we used to pass by his house 50 times a day, hoping maybe he would show up. We would see Pana Ves Pnei Rorecha, you know what I'm saying? And probably the glory of the Shekhinah would shine from his face, and we didn't know what. And if you have a signature, what is it called? An autograph. Oh my gosh. You sell a baseball with an autograph on it for $1 million. Meisim Shehoyah. But it's all because God is great, right? This is all l'shabeach u'lehodos l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, who created such a person. Right? We should recite a bracha on these great, great people. Now, there are a couple of tshuvas here that I want to call your attention to when you get a chance. And they all come up with heterim. For example, you know, that certainly in Jewish culture, and probably in many and many other cultures, Lavdil, we put the physician on a pedestal. And we talk about great physicians. So the tshuva literature wants to say that if your physician that you're praising is a non-Jew, it's mutter. Why? Because you're not worshipping the physician. I underlined, I bolded it in number hey. Eino miskavim l'shvach hagoy. There's all a process, part of the process of seeking out the best medical help that you can possibly get. So you talk about these physicians, that they did this, and that he's the expert at this surgery and that. All that is to help a person locate the right doctor, to go to the right uman, because the halacha is very, very careful and meticulous about going to the best physician that you possibly can under the law of Nishmartim Yodis Nafshon Seichem. So again, just to summarize, we're up to number Vav here on this page. The issues that might come up in watching sports are A, going to a stadium, because that comes under B'chukoseihem, and it's going to be very difficult to come up with a heter for that. And number two, worshipping athletes. So again, if you're playing your own sports, I don't think there's a problem of worshipping a guy. You know, it's an intramural team. Hopefully you're not even worshipping your fellow Jew. But if you're really heavy into sports, you got to be careful about lo sikhanim. But number three, I honestly, truly believe, this is my own chiddush, that there's a third issue in going to a sports game, going to attending a stadium. The Rambam writes in Perek Vav Milchus Deus, this is number Vav on your page, and this is a very, very famous Rambam. I only quoted part of the Rambam. It's a long arichus in the Rambam. And the Rambam establishes that a person is nimshach b'deosav v'masav. He's influenced, he's impacted by the society that he finds himself in, by his reim and his chaverim. And inevitably, I think what happens is that if the culture around you gets a hold of you in one area, it schleps you into a sort of like a whirlwind of different kinds of influences. So before you know it, you know, you're watching the ads, and you know they flash things on the screens there in neon lights in every single color that you could imagine. And you know, football games are wherever you turn. You know, you can't even drive down the streets without they hitting you with a football game. I had a Talmud once, and I accused him of not coming to davening in the morning because he was up late watching television or watching movies. So he was a big tzaddik. I mean it really. But he fell in. He pulls out, and again, you guys will laugh at me, you know, like Rabbi Berzon, what century you're living in. But I was nispal. He pulls out a machine that's literally about this size. It's like 1 inch by 2 inches. And he shows me the football movie that he watches. It's crystal clear. So I said to him, Rabbi Yid, how many times have you seen this movie? He said, I'm up to number 14. He had watched the movie then. I don't know where he's holding today. This is a good couple of years ago. He was already holding then, having seen the movie 13 times on a screen this size. I don't know what his ophthalmologist thinks about the idea. It's probably not healthy for the eyes, but I'm more worried about his soul. And you get so carried away with this and everything that goes around with it, like we said, the worship of sports and sportsmen and athletes, and you get into, you know, people now, I call it the politics of sports. Mamish, the politics. You know, this guy used that drug, and you know, who was, you know, vindicated and who was condemned in a court of law for using drugs and this and that. And then there's the finance of sports. You know, it's bad enough that we're totally surrounded by finance wherever we turn. But on top of that, we got to know who was traded at what price to what team. So I'm just saying that this Rambam, I think, in Hilchos Deos, should also be mentioned in Lefi Aniyus Daiti in any discussion about getting too involved in watching sports. Because the Chachamim say that a person should be mischaver, he should get friendly, and stay in the close company of tzaddikim to learn from their actions, but not to find himself together with the Rishon. Now, I don't know, you know, lately, I don't know, Rabosai, I have to admit, I've been very, very into the idea, I haven't implemented it yet, of Kiruv. Maybe you could go to a baseball game and do Kiruv there, I don't know. Like if you're a Lubavitcher, and it's a daytime game, and you're putting tefillin on people, okay, you know what I mean? Like, I think you'll get a heter for that. I certainly would give you a heter. I'm seven generations Lubavitch on my father's side. So you'll definitely get a heter from me if you want to go to the, you know, to find the Jewish people and get them to put on tefillin. So maybe you could be mashpia on them, but I would be more careful and more worried about you guys being mushpa than being mashpia. And in addition to that, you have issues that touch on modesty, which I mentioned here in number Zion. The Rambam in the 21st parak of Hilchos Yisurei Bia is very famous. The Ramban argues with him, but according to the Rambam, any sort of kirva, whether you come close to an erva and you converse with her in a light sort of way and you wink at her and you look at her beauty and you smell her garments or her perfumes and her this, all comes unto, the Rambam says, the Iser of Lo Sikrivu Legalos Erva. So once again, you have to be careful in watching sports that you're not watching things that you shouldn't be watching. And finally, the Rambam says that every night, and we mentioned this earlier, the Rambam of Kinyan Kesed Torah and Perek Gimel, every night is critical to someone who wants to be Zocha in Kesed Torah. The Rambam is very scary. He writes, Misharotzo Lizkos beKesed Torah Yizor beChol Elosov. When the Rambam adds the word Chol Elosov, you know what he means. Lo Ya'abed Afilu Echad Mihem. Not to waste away one single night. B'sheina, b'achila, b'shesia, b'sicha, u'b'sports, v'chayotzeba. Ela v'talmud Torah v'divrecha. Oh, I added a word there. There's a girsa change. There's a sefer called the Mishnah Halachos of Rabbi Menashe Klein, a very popular Musa sefer and Halacha sefer, and he addresses the question of attending a racetrack. Now, when it comes to betting on horses, so he tells you that the Mishnah in Sanhedrin establishes Mafriche Yonim Sulim Liedus, which means that if these people are betting, they used to have these pigeon flyers, they used to bet on pigeons, then such a person is disqualified from testifying in a Jewish court of law. That's a pretty heavy accusation. The Rambam quotes it in Perek Yud Milchus Eidus, the Shulchan Aruch has it in Choshe Mishpat, in Siman Lamed Dalid. And all this tells you that you got to be very careful about betting. And I, by the way, and I don't want to accuse anyone, but there's a lot of betting going on, even amongst frum Jews, and you got to be very careful about that. Now, some poskim are mekil because they say that halacha psul edus only applies if you have no other source of income. That's called eno osek biyishuva shalolam. So, you know, he didn't go to Turo, and he does, you know, Turo is famous for giving you a parnosa. So he didn't, right? Quoting back to Sokol, every single person who comes in these walls will come out with a job. I guess he knows what he's talking about. I the parents who heard it seem to have swallowed it, so I guess it must be true. But be that as it may, if a person has a job and he's betting, then he's not postulatus. But Rav Menashe Klein is very logical in his conclusion that that's only as far as the psulatus is concerned. Psulatus means someone who makes his living and he has no other source of income except for betting, he's going to be postulatus. You have another job and you bet on the side. But he says that as far as the iser of what's called asmachta lo kanya, which is a complicated sugya in itself, but betting is not something that we want to advocate in favor of. However, what about someone who goes to the horses simply because he enjoys watching horses? He's going for the fun of it. He's not betting. You know, that's just like someone who goes down to Las Vegas and he stays in the, what's it called, the Bellagerie or whatever it's called. I forget the names there, the fancy hotels. And he walks past, you know, 90,000, what do they call those things, those machines? The slot machines. Yeah, I don't want to say it here in the base Medrash, but he says, I'm not interested in betting. I just like watching people gamble. You know, I just like, you know, stand around and watch the money go. Okay, fine. So he likes horses. So he goes to see the spectacle of the horses. So Rav Menashe Klein quotes a Marie Bruna. That's a posek from hundreds of years ago that's very often quoted in the poskim. And he's not sure about this. He vacillates back and forth about someone who goes to watch horses, and his interest is only to enjoy the match itself. He still thinks it might be Asur, and Rav Menashe Klein says, therefore, since it's a suffix in the Marie Bruna, whether you're allowed to do that, and since it's an action that has no redeeming value, it certainly is Asur. But then he asks the following question. Let's say there's no issue of going to the stadium, you know, to the spectator sport, under the law of Bichukoseihem, but he says, even if he would watch it in a television in the comfort of his own home, he says there's still an issue of Bittul Torah. So you have many different issues here, and he says a Yirei Shamayim should stay away. Okay, another few issues. We have 5 minutes. We'll wrap it up. Here's a common question about those who play sports, whether they should take off their talis katan or dafka wear their talis katan. And basically, if you read, you can read on your own, you don't need me for this. I mean, there's a whole long list of Maor Makomos here on page 4. And basically, the upshot is that the first 5 paragraphs here, whatever the number is, the first the first 3 out of 4 paragraphs strongly advocate in favor of wearing your tzitzis when you play ball. And truth be told, when I was a freshman in high school, that's the way it was presented to me. And when we played ball, you may not believe this, but I actually made the first cut of the junior varsity when I was in 9th grade. I didn't make the second cut, and that ended my career as a basketball player, thank God. I wouldn't have got too far anyway. But no, you should know, on Hey Year, I played basketball against the students, and actually, after 10 years, I finally got the ball in the basket. You know, people thought it was a miracle, but I actually did. But what I wanted to tell you is that it was the accepted psak in my day that you absolutely must wear your tzitzis when you play ball. I don't know if you guys relate to that. If you don't relate to that, then you're probably in the post-Rav Elyashiv era. What do I mean? Because in the last paragraph, he quotes Rav Elyashiv and Rav Chaim Kenevsky from a sefer called Rivavos Ephraim. I don't know if there's anyone here is from Memphis, Tennessee. I know we have some guys from Memphis. Anyway, so the Rivavos Ephraim had a discussion with two of the Gedolei Hador, and they both agreed that you should not wear your tzitzis when you play basketball if you will sweat and you'll be so hot that the garment doesn't give you any benefit whatsoever. On the contrary, it makes you uncomfortable, and therefore it loses its shame beget, and therefore it doesn't have a mitzvah of tzitzis. And if that be the case, that you are not fulfilling a mitzvah of tzitzis, then we might very well encourage you not to wear the beged, because in a sense, unless you have a mitzvah, you're being mezalzel in the beged. And therefore, again, if we're talking about a sport, which is 99% of the sports, I think, where you get no benefit from wearing the tzitzis, on the contrary, it's a bit of a hassle, and it certainly heats you up, especially if you wear tzitzis toraisa of tzemer in a hot day. So, you know, in Memphis, Tennessee, you don't want to wear your tzitzis while you're playing ball. Just one point that I want to make before I answer you, so I don't forget. I believe that the reason why, when I was a kid, they exposed us to this very harsh kind of psak that, you know, heaven forbid not to take off your tzitzis, I think that it was for another reason entirely. And I can't tell you if this is true or not, but I really feel, Libi Omerli, that we should consider this with great thought. Tzitzis has a double meaning to it. First of all, it's a kiyuma mitzvah like any other mitzvah, and that then maybe even greater than it's the Gemara says shkula k'neged kol mitzvah. But I think beyond that, tzitzis has a special power inherent in them to remind you of who you are. It becomes a sign, like an os bris, in which you identify publicly as a Jew. And perhaps dafka, because we play sports, and sometimes amongst, you know, with goyim, you have the the basketball leagues and the Tilaminehem, and maybe there is an inyan dafka to wear tzitzis as a matter of keeping us in the fold. You know, here we're involved in a sport with non-Jews. They appreciate it as much as we do. Maybe in those kind of sports, we should be dafka wear at tzitzis. Again, this is not a halachic psak, but I think that maybe that's why when, as I say, in my high school days, they pushed for this. You know, you'd chas v'shalom not to take off your tzitzis, not to take off your yarmulke. Adaraba, we played against, you know, non-Jewish teams, you know, what do they call them? Parochial schools, and dafka to eat. Yeah, all right. Rav Ovadia, I don't know. I take a look in the footnotes if it shows up. This may have been written by an Ashkenazi, so I don't know.
I mean, in some sports, for example, like flag football, you can risk getting the tzitzis torn off.
Yeah? Yeah, I think you should not wear your tzitzis.
This is only
I don't think you should wear your tzitzis in that case. So, you know, because, yeah, you know, tzitzis, there's a very strict inyan about zilzil, tzitzis. We should not be mezalzel. It's a cheftishal mitzvah, and there's an iser of bizui mitzvah. Two more points, and then we'll let you go. Number one, what about the case of a woman who becomes a balas tshuva, her husband is not religious, and he insists on watching football or whatever sport it is on Shabbos? Can she set up a Shabbos clock, and maybe she should set up a Shabbos clock, in order to reduce the chil Shabbos, facilitate her husband's ability to watch the football game without having to incur a chil Shabbos? I was absolutely fascinated by the question. At the end of the day, there's no clear-cut answer to this question. You have to ask your local rabbi, and I can talk to you about it and give you my opinion after the shiur if you'd like. But I found it a fascinating question. And the last points that I want to make with you is, number one, what about fishing? Now, there's something called catch and release fishing. So look, if you're fishing because you want to bring home dinner to your wife, that's certainly mutter. But if you're doing it just for the sake of sport, and you're going to just throw the fish back in, the issue becomes what?
Sarbalich.
So Rav Moshe has a gevaldige kula, and honestly, it doesn't sit well with me, but that's my opinion, but yesh al milismok, you don't have to get ahead from me. Rav Moshe comes to the conclusion that it's a long tshuva, kol davashu litzarech adam, leka iser tzar balichai. If you have a need to go fishing, again, I'm not exactly on the same page. I don't know why you have to go fishing, but those who like fishing will continue to like fishing, I'm sure, till Bias Goel. And therefore, they rely on Rav Moshe, who says that it's not Tzar B'chaim because you get some sort of benefit, you get a kick from it. And as long as a man is nene from something, it's not considered Tzar B'chaim. Tzar B'chaim, according to Rav Moshe, means to deliberately inflict pain upon a Balchai. that we're enjoined from doing. But if you're not doing it deliberately for that purpose, but rather for your own purpose, then it's moot. I want to thank everyone for coming. And I hope there's Carlos and Gabi's upstairs, because I'm getting hungry, I don't know about you. And Shigoyach for the Talmud Torah. Hopefully it made an impact on your nefesh, the fact that you were here for 3 hours, and not violating the Isur B'Koseim Lo Seilei.
What about hunting? Does the same thing apply to hunting?
Hunting, I think...
Well, exactly 1 hour.